Stacy Whitbeck has a statistic that I found remarkable. 99% of their projects delivered on time and on budget across some of the most complex urban transit construction environments in the country. High Valley Transit has a statistic that's equally striking. Up to 10,000 workers travel into Park City every peak season, and the road they depend on, State Road 224, is one of the most congested in the state. Today, those two organizations are in the same room, and we're talking about the Bobsled Express, the bus rapid transit system that they're putting together that is designed to solve one of Utah's most pressing transportation and economic challenges. We have Kat LaChapelle from Stacy Whitbeck and Gabe Shields from High Valley Transit. Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Okay, yeah, thanks for having us.
Right on. So this is infrastructure, economics, and community investment all in one conversation. Let's just dig in. For listeners who don't know the SR 224 corridor, can you, either of you, paint a picture of what peak season congestion actually looks like and what the economic cost of that congestion has been for Summit County businesses and workers?
Yeah, so I would say my vision of that peak season congestion really looks like you get out of the ski resort after a great day at 4 o'clock, but then you're not home until 6 or 7 in the evening. By that point, you're exhausted and you're questioning, do I really want to wake up and do this again tomorrow? You know, thinking about the cost of that congestion for Summit County businesses, we're looking for a robust and resilient tourist economy. But also that means visitors that come in, but it also means workforce that comes in. So, you know, thinking about that from how many visitors do we have, also to how do we have workers that allow this community to prosper.
High Valley Transit already provides free public transit to the Wasatch back. What does the ridership data tell you about demand on the SR 224 corridor specifically? And what convinced you that this investment was justified?
So every year, High Valley sees over 1 million riders move up and down the Wasatch back. And really, over the last 15 years, there's been a study to understand, you know, how do we maintain our mountain lifestyle while allowing people to move about the Wasatch back and enjoy the lifestyle that we have. And we looked at a lot of different opportunities, and the data shows that the best way to move those people is by a dedicated transit solution. So looking at things like light rail, looking at bus rapid transit, aerial transit, we looked at automated guideways. But the data suggests that the biggest bang for the buck is what's called bus rapid transit. So that's what we're building on the 224 corridor.
And how will that work?
Yeah, so bus rapid transit really is, if you can think about it as a train that has its own tracks, a bus that has its own lane. So it is prioritized, it is set aside, it is, you know, really trying to elevate that bus to say, this is not a space for cars, this is for, you know, public transit users. So they're, you know, moving faster than traffic, they're getting a boost at traffic signals. So really elevating and prioritizing that bus movement.
So now cars won't go in the lane? I mean, because come on, down in Salt Lake, we know cars have tried to go on the railroad tracks.
That's a great conversation. So there are different modes around, you know, light rail, there's streetcar, there's bus rapid transit. But yeah, I would say that cars could enter the bus lane. That's a really big thing that we're focusing on is, you know, really the education piece. So over the next 2 years, we're heavy in messaging, you know, how to move about the construction site, how to keep our workers safe. But as we get closer to operation, that's really where we're going to focus on. How do you use these lanes? How do you interact with a bus? How do you look out for people that are driving? How do you, you know, interact when a bus is stopping?
Is the bus going to have, are they going to have drivers or is it going to be automated?
Yeah. So these are traditional buses with drivers.
Okay.
Okay, and I take it that the keeping the cars out of the lane is basically an enforcement problem more than anything else. Is any thought being given to allowing any kind of non-bus traffic in the lane, such as HOV4 or anything like that?
Yeah, I will say right now, the way this project is actually set up is that, you know, High Valley doesn't own this road.
Right, right.
This is a UDOT road where, you know, we are bringing some money to the table to improve this road, almost like if a utility wants to run across the road or somebody wants to put a driveway on it. You know, this is a UDOT facility where we are, you know, adding on to it. And at the end of the day, when we finish this construction project, High Valley will enter into a, you know, an operational agreement with UDOT to say, hey, this is your infrastructure. May we use it for transit? I will say that, you know, that is our agreement that we are pursuing with UDOT. But I know there are other, you know, other industries, other partners out there that would love to pursue additional agreements. You know, those are conversations that are being had with UDOT regional leadership. But, you know, that remains to be told.
So, Kat, Stacy Whitbeck has built transit infrastructure across the country from San Diego to Seattle. What made the SR-224 Bus Rapid Transit project stand out as a project that you wanted to be part of?
Yeah, this type of project is right up our alley. Just to name some of the few reasons, this is the third BRT that we've partnered on in Utah. So one in Ogden, one in Salt Lake, and this is our third. It's also a CMGC project, alternative delivery, with a client that values partnership and collaboration. It's also complex, and maybe most importantly to me, it's really cool. It's iconic, right? We say at Stacy Whitbeck, we build cool stuff. You know, a lot of us at Stacy Whitbeck, we're the users of the trails we recreate up here in Park City. We're all excited about the Olympics, and this project really has it all. Not to mention, we met with High Valley Transit a long time ago to talk about this project, to understand their contracting methods. We wanted to understand all of their concerns and their approach to the project, and we felt we were really aligned and best suited to build this.
You know, when I hear about someone who's building a tall building, I could think that might be pretty complicated. When I hear that somebody's just going to add another lane to a road, it doesn't strike me as complicated. Tell us what I'm missing.
You're missing all the stuff you don't see, right? You're missing those utilities. You're missing the driveways we're blocking access to. You're missing the drainage. You know, we're building in Park City. I've heard that there's two seasons here. There's summer and there's construction season. And, you know, mud season falls during construction season, right? So we've got a lot of water that we got to handle on this project. And that's one of our big challenges.
You know, I think Roger, another thing about building a tall building is, you know, you think about a parcel that's vacant. There's no one on that parcel except for those construction workers. Where we do highway construction, all those people that move about the corridor in their cars, on their bikes, on their scooters, on feet, we have to make sure that they can continue moving up and down the corridor safely. So that's another one of those complications.
And we're going to see some, obviously, disruption that people are going to be cranky about, because part of the process is you're going to have to close some lanes from time to time, I take it.
Yeah, we've really focused on phasing this project to avoid impacts to the community. And we know traffic is a big concern. It's an existing concern, and it's something that this project wants to alleviate. And we're trying our best not to cause more and more problems. So we've really phased the project to be able to keep two lanes of traffic open in each direction during the duration of the project.
Yeah, and I would add to that, during our late stages of design, we did a broad community survey across Summit County and really tried to understand, hey, as we move forward, what are the largest concerns? And what we heard about was traffic and congestion during construction, and then also not knowing where to get information or surprises. So that has really guided our public outreach survey, you know, our public outreach approach to say, look, these are the things that really care most, you know, matter most to this community. How do we keep traffic lanes open, and how do we not surprise people?
Bus Rapid Transit, BRT, is often described as rail-like service, like you said, but at a bus cost. Is it that different?
Okay, so thinking about the cost difference between light rail and bus rapid transit, the Mid Valley Express just opened in Salt Lake City, and I saw the article by Jay Fox, the UTA director, that said that, you know, essentially bus rapid transit is, you know, a train on rubber tires for a fifth of the cost. So where that project cost about $100 million, light rail would have cost nearly $500. So, you know, really what it comes down to is there's so much more complexity in design doing light rail. You know, putting rails in the ground, you always have to have a maintenance station. So thinking about, you know, a building that's 50,000 or more square feet to maintain your trains, because you can't just take a train to the mechanic shop. Also think about the cost of purchasing rail vehicles versus the cost of a rubber tire vehicle. The integration between trains and traffic signals for cars, you know, there's just all of these compounding effects that grow with that. The overhead catenary system, the wires that power the trains, you know, the costs just spiral quicker and quicker and quicker. And I won't shy away from it. Everybody loves a train. I love a train. I will accept a check for $400 million if we want to go from BRT to train. But, you know, this, we think it's an incredible value proposition for the funding.
Okay, so the Park City Chamber of Commerce cited 1,050 businesses that rely on transit for worker and visitor access. How do you quantify the economic return on a transit investment like this? And most importantly, who's tracking that economic data?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, the way the FTA reports this back out, Federal Transit Administration, is that for every dollar invested in transit, $5 come back. So again, even looking at the High Valley Transit ridership data, we know that 70% of our riders, so 70% of those million rides a year our workforce. So, you know, bringing those folks into the community to work in our businesses, to service the restaurants, the hotels, spin the lifts at the resorts, these things don't happen without workforce coming in on a, you know, a really efficient, reliable, dignified transit service.
Okay, so Kat, Stacy Whitbeck is known for alternative delivery methods, the CMGC, as you mentioned, the for listeners, that's construction manager / general contractor. So it's the CMGC, design, build, and collaborative approaches. What delivery method was used for the Bobsled Express, and why was that the right choice for this particular project?
Yeah, so this is a CMGC project, so construction manager, general contractor. This model brings the contractor in early while still allowing the agency to manage the design. So we work alongside the designers and the agency to do early collaboration that helps us adapt to unforeseen challenges, to shifting scopes, to funding timelines. And it really builds relationships for better issue resolution throughout the duration of the project. We find that it also statistically accelerates schedules by 10 to 20%, and it really resolves obstacles a lot earlier on. We've worked on CMGC projects across the nation, and we've actually partnered with 10 agencies on their first CMGC project. This model fits our company culture really, really well. It's all about transparency and partnership and doing the right thing. CMGC is great for these complex projects, right? A lot of the work that we're doing might not seem that complex, but it's the area that we're doing it in. It's the community impacts. It's the little things that really matter on this project, and CMGC helps us get ahead of those.
Yeah, I mean, the stat at the beginning, 99% on time, on budget. That's fantastic. That's something to be proud of. Now, I'm familiar with Stacy Whitbeck from the early days. Y'all did the San Francisco streetcar.
That's where our roots are from.
Yeah, way back when. Okay, so this is a project between, as we mentioned, High Valley Transit, UDOT, Summit County, Park City. How do you manage construction in an environment with that many stakeholders, and what's the key to keeping everyone aligned and everyone happy?
You're right. The key to project success is keeping everyone aligned. And we met with those stakeholders early on in the pre-construction period, which allowed us to build those relationships I was talking about earlier to resolve issues quickly throughout the duration of the project. We also meet with those key stakeholders weekly during construction so we can provide project updates and also get updates on the other projects, right? Summer's construction season, so you better believe there's other contractors trying to get out there to complete their work. And I just want to be clear that this collaboration doesn't happen without buy-in. And I feel we're really fortunate to have the support of Summit County and Park City, as well as UDOT. We really have their buy-in, so we're able to partner on this project. And of course, another major key stakeholder here is the community. And we've set up a community advisory board where we can get direct feedback from community members, business owners, as well as city council members on the course of construction of the project so we can adapt in real time.
Are there any businesses or any people, you know, the same person over and over giving you guys a hard time?
I mean, I think it's early days. You know, we are trying to be extremely proactive to get out ahead of things. Right now, we're not seeing, you know, continuous issues. And hopefully by the end of the project, we're not seeing any issues that, you know, perpetuate, you know, throughout the project. Really, our approach is to identify issues, get a quick resolution, and move forward so that way there's not something that continues all the way through. And I want to go back to something that Kat was saying about the CMGC process. This really is a collaboration, and something that Stacy Whitbeck brings from a cultural perspective is that, you know, this is everybody all in together, the owner, the contractor, the engineer, the other agency stakeholders against the project, you know, against all the headwinds and Murphy's Law that's going to come out against us, you know, whether it's weather, a pandemic, a war in the Middle East that affects fuel prices. There are a million things that can take these off the track, and, you know, through this CMGC and the partnering relationship that we have, you know, we have committed to each other that the only way we get this done and come out ahead and something we can be proud of is that if we partner and commit to candid conversations. So it's been an incredible journey so far.
You just mentioned fuel prices, and I know Stacy Whitbeck has a lot of trucks on the road. sometimes they're just pickup trucks with one person in it, and they have to go a half mile or a mile down to the other side of the present project. Are they still driving their trucks, or are you going to get them bicycles, e-bikes? Save some.
This is actually something I've talked about. You know, the speed limit on SR 224 is 45 miles an hour, and we do job drives all the time to check out safety, but that's a little bit too fast. So I try to bike the bike lane once a week to try to see it from a slower perspective, and I do have an e-bike that I'll be using to do that.
Yeah, that really does harken back to something that Kat mentioned earlier, is that, you know, we don't just work here. We recreate here. We patronize businesses.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, we visit the shops, we visit the restaurants, the breweries. You know, we participate in this community as much as we work here. And, you know, we look at it from construction and engineering professionals, but we also look at it through the community's eyes. So, you know, we visit the corridor on our vehicles. We also visit the corridor on the trails. You know, we really try to understand it and experience it as the community does.
One of the things you mentioned earlier was the importance of reliability in terms of actually offering a product that the workforce will take advantage of. How would you sort of identify reliability problems in the past, and what do you think the Bob will do to remedy that?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. You know, I think we all care about speed. We all care about, you know, how fast can we get somewhere. But at the end of the day, reliability is what we really hear is what's critical. So reliability is, can I get to work on time? Can I get home for soccer practice in time, or my kids play on time? So, you know, people want predictability. They want reliability to know that they can get where they need to go on time consistently and make those commitments to their employer or to their family. And, you know, as a personal story, I used to work here at the Marsac building and live in Salt Lake. And there would be some days I would leave Marsac at 4:30 and I would be home, you know, by 5:15. Other days I would leave Marsac and I'd be home at 6:30 or 7. And those are really, really challenging things to say, you know, hey, sorry, traffic's bad. I'm not going to be home for another hour and a half. Can you pick up our son? Can you do dinner by yourself? You know, those are things that, you know, that's a personal story, a personal anecdote. But I would be willing to bet at least 150 cents that I'm not the only one that has that story. You know, how many employers, how many ski resorts or hotels, their workers say, I can't take transit because it gets delayed. The bus breaks down. It's in traffic with everybody else. Why would I take that? So we're really trying to create a service where people can rely on it and feel good that, you know, this is a better way. It's consistent. I know what I'm getting every single time.
Yeah. Now, will there be a large parking garage or something out at Kimball Junction where workers can just leave their car and then, you know, if they're working at the canyons, they jump on a bus and zip right over there?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. So parking is not directly tied into the bus rapid transit system. And in a lot of ways, a bus rapid transit system and High Valley system in general doesn't rely on large capture parking. You know, we have a extremely robust and effective microtransit system that brings you from your origin or your destination, you know, to that fixed route service. But we do connect to a number of park and rides in the area. So we run service that comes past the Jeremy Ranch park and ride, as well as the Ecker Hill park and ride. And then we also have our 107 that goes down into Salt Lake. And all of those connect through the Kimball Junction Transit Center. And then in the future, as High Valley looks to expand the Transit Center in the Kimball Junction area, you know, creating those opportunities for those that do look for a place to park a car there.
Okay, so the goal is 5,000 riders a day. What are we at now?
So right now we're at about 3,000 riders a day on our 10X, which was formerly the Electric Express through Park City.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, we have the 101, which was the Spiro that goes up and down. It's kind of the local service. It stops at every neighborhood, every cross street. That combined with the 10X, right now we're hitting about that 5,000 rides a day.
Yeah. So this bus rapid, this BRT will go from Kimball Junction to about the beginning of Park City, or all the way up to Deer Valley Drive?
So it'll terminate at the Old Town Transit Center.
Oh, all the way up there.
Yes, correct. So where people get on the 10X today, that's where the Bob will drop off and pick up.
Do they have to add, I understand we mentioned electric buses. Will they add more chargers?
So right now there is not charging planned at the Old Town Transit Center. Previously, an older version of buses that we had used an overhead charging system that has since been removed at Park City. You know, we do continue to work with Park City to figure out where we, you know, share infrastructure, share charging, share, you know, bus bays and bus stops. But at the moment, there is not an overhead charger where the Bob will park at the Old Town Transit Center.
I'd heard talk of in-ground electric vehicle charging, you know, bus charging. I think it was in a project in Provo, experimental. Is that something down the road? And would you have to dig up those lanes that you're paving?
I will say that's not something that we are pursuing or exploring now, and there would need to be, you know, some removal of that. But you know, Utah State University has a experimental track up there where they have used a, you know, tractor trailer system, and they've pulled it around a loop, and they've, you know, got to a point where they can transmit substantial energy up through that inductive charging system. So, you know, I would say that's not ruled out, but it's not something that we're considering right now.
Gotcha. You guys are both civil engineers, and now you're community engagement almost. But you still have that civil engineer background, so you understand every step of this project and can relate it, as you're doing with us here, wonderfully. Could a PR person have done this, or you need the civil engineering background?
You know, we do meet with a lot of stakeholders. You know, I actually just came from a stakeholder meeting, and I'm going to go to another one this afternoon. And I always joke that I had a minor in political science in college, and I sometimes use that a little bit more than I do my civil engineering degree. But a lot of it is just making this world that we live and breathe it every day, more accessible to people. What can they expect during the construction season? What can they expect the change to look like? How is that going to affect their access to their businesses? And just really digesting the, you know, I can read a plan sheet in my sleep, but not everyone has that background. And a lot of it is just using our engineering background to try to communicate not only what they're going to see, but also how it's going to impact them in the future. But we do have a great PR team that helps us when we are at a lack of words as engineers.
You know, Kat, my minor is in military science, and I'm glad to say I don't use that in my day job more than my civil engineering degree. But I read a book recently called The 100-Year Life, and it talks about this idea that your initial education you get a lot of times in a technical realm, it really only runs about 5 to 7 years through your career, and then you transition more to a soft skill side, more communications, more critical thinking, more involvement with the community, and a people focus. So, you know, I think it does matter where you start and kind of the roots and the foundation you have, but at a certain point, we all get to be in a space where we're interacting with people.
So 5,000 riders a day. When you get to that number, what does that look like? What does the success of that look like economically? And what metrics are you watching for that reason? And what does that mean for Park City if this works and we hit the numbers?
You know, I think success on a project like this is a, you know, keeping the economy vital, keeping it approachable, keeping it, you know, in a way where people feel like the, you know, they can move about the community without being stuck in traffic, that, you know, we've really preserved our way of life. You know, this is not a congestion fixing project. You know, this is a way to allow access and reliability through the community. So again, it's, you know, can we move more people through the community? Can we, you know, allow others, you know, into our beautiful areas for recreation? Can we have, you know, vital and thriving economies while not, you know, continuing to widen our roads? You know, that's what success looks like for me on this type of project.
And so, as you mentioned, adding three buses all in a row is kind of like a train. And so if you suddenly need 7,500 people to move, more buses on those paved roads, I imagine.
Yeah, we actually looked at that. So on, you know, on opening day, when we're running frequencies at 15 minutes during off hours, That's the point where we can move 5,000 people. You know, during winter events or heavier ski days, when we increase frequency to 10-minute headways, that's where we're able to move, you know, closer to 10,000 people per day. And then you go towards the Olympics or a major event, we could run frequency, you know, a bus every 2 to 3 minutes. Now you're looking at moving 50,000 people up and down the corridor. So again, it's not a train where you have a set number of cars and a set frequency. We can really adapt throughout the season or as the years grow.
And that saves money in the long run.
Correct.
Wonderful. Well, we just spent a few minutes with Kat LaChapelle from Stacy Whitbeck and Gabe Shields from High Valley Transit, learning all about the BOB, Bus Rapid Transit System. Thank you very much for joining us and giving your insight and sharing the knowledge and everything that's going to happen with this with all our listeners.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hey, stay with us. We'll be right back.